Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market. Whether you are cooking for one or for a crowd, Fairway Market literally has everything you need for a fantastic meal. But if you don't feel like cooking, no worries, they cater. Check out fairwaymarket.com for more information, and be sure to check the new blog, On Our Plate, for weekly specials, health tips, and recipes.
Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.com.
Hey, this is Jean-Luc from Lotus Wines in New York City. You're listening to Heritage Radio.
I don't want that guy to play This Is Heritage Radio. That's not even our name. God. No. That's the last time. Delete that, Frenchman.
Deleted.
Good Lord. One time I was on ABC News with Peter Jennings, and they were like, we need a chef to talk about these heritage turkeys. It was a big, beautiful story. Peter Jennings was really ahead of his time in terms of talking about the obesity epidemic and diet and all of that. And he asked Alain Sayac from the French Culinary Institute. They were like, okay, we'll use him. So they were like, okay, Alain, when the red light goes on, just say, I love the turkey. He's like, got it. So they'd be like, action. And he'd be like, the turkey is something that I love very much. And they'd be like, cut. Just say, love turkey. And they'd be like, action. He'd be like, loving turkey is a Frenchman. And they'd be like, ah. And it took like 3 hours. And that guy, you're like, could you say Heritage Radio Network? He's like, okay. I mean, these guys have lived in America for 40, 50 years and can't, you know, spit out a sentence. Anyway, my name is Patrick Martins. This is the Heritage Radio Network. .org. We are sponsored by Fairway, which is really appropriate today that Fairway sponsors this episode, because this episode is about independent businesses. You could say slow businesses, you know, kind of part of slow living. And we have the founders of TechServe, the number one Apple Macintosh store, really, probably in the world. They're the best service providers. I mean, if you've lived in New York at any point, you know TechServe. So.
And the collection of old radios they have is really something to check out.
That's what I actually asked them to include that into the sponsorship. David was like, no.
Yeah.
But in HeritageRadioNetwork.org news, we have two exciting new shows going on,
yeah,
Jack,
don't we? Yeah, it's about time we got two new big shows, too.
And they're huge. I mean, they're like huge. All of a sudden, they are immediately placed at the tippity top of the pyramid in terms of hugeness.
I think your followers especially will know Dorothy Cann Hamilton.
Dorothy Cann Hamilton is, she's actually been behind every food movement that this country has seen in the past 30 years. So she was a big founder back in the Julia Child and Robert Mondavi days of the American Institute of Wine and Food, which before Slow Food was a really big organization and, you know, still exists. I think they have something called the Days of Taste. I mean, they're not what they used to be, but, you know, it was a really, really powerful organization. Then came Slow Food, and her and Alice Waters, you know, kind of became friends, and Alice introduced Dorothy to me, and they gave Slow Food its first office in the United States. It had been in my apartment previously. And then thirdly, she, when the James Beard Foundation had all that fallout from the executive director that, you know, stole all this money from it, she became on the board of the James Beard Foundation. So she's a real powerful lady. And of course, she is the owner of the French Culinary Institute, which is now, I believe, the Institute of Culinary Education.
Nice.
And it's her first guest is going to be Jacques Pepin, right?
Yes, it will.
And she's going to have, you know, she says of the 137 master sommeliers in the world, 9 work for me, and they will be on, and I will have the best chefs on. And I'm actually really excited. I believe she's going to bring on some of these Michelin chefs from France.
Yeah, I'm scared. I've got my work cut out for me.
Well, you have to learn French.
That's right.
So, no, she's going to start. She's going to come into the studio this Friday, and then she's going to start on the 9th, I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
So now, Jack, tell us about how Wednesdays are shaping up. It's a day you demanded to be in studio.
I demanded it.
And now tell us. No, in a good
so
way.
So far we've got Mitchell Davis, Dorothy Ken Hamilton, and Damon's The Speakeasy, and we're looking to fill a few more slots on Wednesday and make that a really powerful lineup.
Yeah, because right now it's pretty powerful.
Absolutely. And so the second show that we've booked is Grace Bonney of the popular blog Design Sponge.
How many followers does that blog have?
Man, a lot. She
like 800,000 or 80,000?
Half a million followers on Twitter.
Jesus.
Which is incredible. Yeah, she's gone really viral. She's a very sweet woman, and she debuted her show last week. Here's how she describes the show. Grace Bonney takes her love of art and design from the web to radio. Through a series of interviews with designers, store owners, and up-and-coming members of the creative community, Grace will delve deeper into the world of independent artists, from exploring the day-to-day lives of contemporary makers to discussing the challenges they face. After the jump, we'll take the conversation off the screen and into real life. So, cool.
Very, very nice. Do you have a clip?
I did. This was her first show with famous designer, Todd Oldham. I mean, I don't know much about design, but he's pretty famous. So I'm going to play a clip from that right now.
He's Oldham School.
And I love that you've carried that through since the beginning, that no matter how successful you have gotten, you still go back to these sort of everyday materials. And I see that present in the kid collection that you're doing for Target now, which I think is fantastic. And I love that you've approached it from an angle of these essential craft goods. These are, you know, art materials children are going to be working with, can still be beautiful objects. And I remember
absolutely.
When we got to see those crowns that have layers of color in them.
Yeah.
Could be used as a sculpture, let alone an actual functional object.
Absolutely. I just remember everything about the things, the toys or whatever I had as a kid, the way the instructions looked, the off-register printing, it all was just so meaningful. So when we had the opportunity to do something for kids, we took it really, really seriously. And I'm not going to be the one that screws up a kid. That's not my job. There's plenty of other people signed up for that.
Wow, that's good. She's a strong woman. I mean, you can hear she knows her stuff, huh?
Yeah, and I'll say this. She hosted a college radio show, which gives her like 20 points in my book.
Well, listen, 500,000 Twitter followers gives us 500,000 points on our list. I mean, that's really, you know, and one thing I really am looking forward to, you know, the station's taken off. We have how many hits now a month?
I'm proud to say this. Now we can, like, it's like that McDonald's sign that says over a billion served. We had over a million hits this month, which is
over
a new record
a
for the site.
Hits. Damn.
Yes. So
that is so real, you know. And Jack, I, you know, those million hits, one of the things, just for our listeners to know, Jack and his team, which includes Katie Kiefer and Aaron and all these people, Carlo, who he brings on, Carlos, he brings on to help him. I mean, one of Jack's goals is to turn the kind of dead time when there's not live shows into really entertaining entertainment, basically.
Sure.
So
yeah, this is your vision, and it's brilliant. And I think very soon you'll be able to tune in anytime throughout the course of a 24-hour day and hear something new and original and post-produced and interesting.
And be patient. This comes piece by piece,
right.
And some things will be better than others. But essentially, we are going down the long path towards 24-hour of content, a lot of it through Jack's office and a lot of it through our hosts.
And I'll say this for all the listeners that have been asking about iPhone compatibility, it is coming soon. So that is another step in this process.
And everybody says to me, Patrick, why do you see the long-term future of HRN? And my response now is, we want 10% of the NPR market. That's right, 10%.
Yeah.
Jack, can you play a sound effect, some intimidating cougar or something?
Oh, man, you know my sound effects are under construction.
Well, anyway, we do want 10% of the NPR market. I mean, that's a fair, you know, planetary orbit, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, we'll be, you know, concentrating on food. So anyway, I'm going to cut to a very short break, and we are going to come back to David Lerner and Kevin Hart. And this is the slow technology in a way, and the slow businesses behind it. So I really enjoyed this interview, and they are very, very powerful sponsors of HRN and have been from the beginning. So
shout
please
out
listen.
To me,
and please don't go to the Mac stores. Go to TechServe. Back everybody. We are broadcasting from Roberta's, 261 Moore Street. I'm Patrick Martins. We are sponsored very generously by an independent market chain. It's called Fairway Market. Steve Jenkins, thanks so much for being a sponsor. In studio, we have David Lerner and Kevin Hart from TechServe, a place that I've been going to for decades as a born and raised New Yorker. And these guys have been with us forever, Jack, huh? I mean, since we very first started, TechServe.
Absolutely.
The one getting us all the equipment.
In the early stages of the station, they were by far the most popular sponsor because most of the hosts had dealt with them before, too.
Well, there was really no one else to deal with if you were in the Mac world, you know, for a number of years. So anyway, welcome in the studio, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I have so many questions to ask, you know, about computers. It's like blood or oxygen, you know. It's so important to daily life. And to have you guys in studio is awesome. And you guys have been unbelievable to us here at Heritage Radio Network, especially now that we're a nonprofit. So I want to ask you, what was the landscape of computers in America in like the 70s, 80s, and 90s and today? I mean, tell us when TechServe started, when you first broke into the business, and take us through this roller coaster journey.
TechServe started in 87. We'd been using Macs in our electronic design business before that. We made the Acousticide recorded tour machines used for like the Treasures of King Tut tour. We manufactured those here in Manhattan.
Aztec, that was something you did before getting
into... It was a different company, but the same people. And we were using Macs to do those, to do the CAD drawings and the printed circuit board layout and everything.
So tell me, so Macintosh, when were the first Macintoshes introduced? I mean, I seem to remember my science teacher carrying the heaviest knapsack of all time that had like an early version of a Macintosh in the back of it.
Well, the Mac, I think, was in 84.
84, so
and,
you were out there.
And we bought them as soon as they came out.
Very interesting. How did that happen? Did you just buy the most of them and therefore you became the premier distributor, or did you...
No, we didn't start selling them till the mid-90s.
I see.
We just bought them as engineers. We thought they were really cool. We liked the way they worked. We liked the... It was kind of the bitmap screen was the first... You know, before that it was all text-based.
Mm-hmm.
And the bitmap screen worked very well for drawing and electronics.
Well, tell us a little bit about that for our listeners. I mean, because we really want to cover the as much as we can today. What did it offer exactly? Who was interested in a non-text-based computer? What market segment were they going after?
I'm not sure they knew who they were going after. Probably home users. But it just, the combination of the mouse, which just gave you a whole freedom that you didn't have with a cursor-based system. And the fact that it was the bitmap screen, all the computers before that were text, you know, usually green letters on a black background. But there was very little you could put there, very little you could do with them. Once you had the bitmapped interface, you could do colors, you could do all sorts of different fonts. They obviously created the desktop publishing industry.
So what is bitmap exactly? I mean, is it the desktop that I know to be
it's,
what I look
it's
at?
It's literally the characters, instead of being drawn as a vector, are made up of a lot of little bits, the way any kind of display works these days.
So very, very interesting. Well, God, this is going to be a tough interview because I never get to interview guys like, you know, in this field. But was your industry basically making tour audio recordings for museums?
We had met at WBAI, the Listener's Board Radio in New York, before NPR existed. And we were techies. We built things. And at BAI, we built lots of little boxes and broadcast consoles and all kinds of things. And then we went off on our own to do the same thing. And Acousticide was our biggest customer. But we also designed electronic pillboxes. We made audio listening stations that are still in use at the Lincoln Center Library. And we made various interesting products, but it was very slow to make them. One of our programming partner wanted about a year per project.
Wow.
And slow electronics doesn't work as well as slow food.
Slow electronics, right. Electronics are supposed to be fast.
Yeah. People are all in a hurry.
And you got into this line of work. I mean, were you a contemporary of, Gates and all these guys that were just in their garages tinkering with stuff? Or?
Well, we never knew those guys. I mean, again, we were radio engineers. And what actually happened was the Macs didn't have a fan, which is very exciting because they were very quiet. But after about 3 years, they started overheating.
Huh.
And they needed repairs that Apple charged $300 or $400 for. So we actually started as tinkerers doing our own repairs for, you know, $130. And for years we were unauthorized service.
Very interesting. Now, of course, you're authorized.
Well, customers wanted us to do warranty service as well, so eventually we made a relationship with Apple. And in order to do warranty service, they wanted us to sell computers. So, and then it kind of mushroomed from there.
So really, repairs was your kind of gateway into the whole world, and then it eventually became, what do you call it, just distributors? Is that where you are?
Or? Resellers.
Resellers.
We're, you know, solution providers, really.
Now, of course, the repairs world seems to have diminished, because don't most people just buy a new computer or something when it goes out? Or, I mean, how does it work?
Well, the repair world is changing tremendously. Some things like hard drives are slowly turning into solid state drives. There are less things to fail. There's still a lot of software work, and there, you know, but repair, I think it changed from, we used to do a lot of soldering, and now the Apple warranty repair is mostly swapping modules. And I think it's going to move toward swapping units, as like an iPhone, you know, an Apple warranty iPhone repair. You get a unit that's been remanufactured to the original spec.
Got it.
And there still is a lot of out-of-warranty repair, too, that we do. You know, at the retail space on West 23rd Street, about 20% of our daily foot traffic is people coming in for repairs or consultations, questions on their devices. So it's steady. It's changing, as David said, but it is still a very steady stream of folks coming in with questions.
I'm just I just imagine being like, the hell with it, I'm buying a new one. Like, I can't survive 4 days without my computer. You know, it just seems like, and then also to repair, it seems like an expensive proposition.
So that's an interesting thing, because frequently people think you're trying to upsell them to a new computer when you tell them it makes more sense to buy a new computer than to fix the old one. And usually the repairing the old one is actually more profitable. But, you know, we just, our technical belief is, it's time for a new one.
So what was your biggest challenge to market and to sell people things back in their early 90s and then in the 2000s and the 2012s? How has your customer base changed, if you can make any general stereotypes?
Well, I think Macs were a very small community of kind of graphic designers and creative professionals, and we were the place in New York at that point. And then Apple opened all their own stores, and their market just exploded. And so it's changed.
It's definitely changed a lot. Well, I mean, let's talk about TechServe. So, I mean, you guys have an unbelievable style. I mean, you guys have been in Sex and the City and all these TV shows. I mean, you were the only place to go to if you had a Macintosh. So tell us about that unbelievably famous space on 23rd Street, the Coke machine, all the antique radios. You know, tell us about that.
Well, actually, at WBAI 1970, I ran a sustainable Coke machine that was 10 cents with the original refillable, returnable bottles. And I exactly broke even if about 90% of the bottles were returned and recycled.
Wow.
So I was a big Coke drinker.
Yeah.
So when we moved into one of our spaces on 23rd Street, I think 116 West 23rd, my partner found this Coke machine that's actually about my age. And it's on its second compressor.
So like 30, 35 years old?
A little more than that. I think it was made in the 50s.
Okay.
And eventually we used to actually get Coke from Philadelphia from a distributor that used the original refillable bottles. And eventually that's gone now. The bottles are recycled, but they're not refilled.
But the machine is still there and still operating. And it's still 10 cents.
It's really fun. I mean, you have fish, right? If I recall. I mean, you have a fish tank. Then you have all these beautiful posters, these Macintosh posters of all these famous luminaries from over the century. You have maybe 300 old radio sets. Well,
we feel that what sets TechServe apart from, for instance, the Apple Store is that we have the whole life cycle of electronics, of products, of customers, rather than totally being about tomorrow, where, you know, it's yesterday and today and tomorrow, and, you know, we will help people move forward.
Well, that is. You guys, that is kind of what distinguishes you guys from these new places. Big Mac stores, these printing money places all over the country are opening up because you do kind of service people differently. And you were telling me last time we met that a number of private accounts just have partnered with you. And those are contracts that have been honored by the Mac people. For instance, Time Magazine, New York Times. What is your relationship exactly with some of those bigger firms?
Well, we sell more than just the devices. Mm-hmm. We have an ongoing service relationship with them. You know, as David said, we're more of a solutions provider. So we're not only sell you the box, and we can do that readily and quickly because of proximity, but we're offering our expertise in software, services, ongoing support. Mm-hmm. So it's the wraparound solutions and the additional services that we provide that really separate us, especially for our corporate accounts. And that includes small and medium businesses as well.
Sure. But you don't do door-to-door, right? I mean, would you send someone to Time Magazine to set up their, you know, computers talking to each other? Or do you deal with their IT guys? How does that work?
It's a combination of those things. Mm-hmm. We can, again, depending on the size of the client and what the real need is, we send people on site. We'll deliver them. We'll set them up. We'll configure them. We'll put them into their whole IT environment. We'll teach them how to support them.
If they're important enough, you'll even go, huh?
Sure.
We have a team of engineers who are working in the field. It's mostly not break fix. It's mostly video workflows and asset management and that sort of kind of complex storage solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually about half our business is outside of our retail store.
Well, before we go to break, I wanted to ask you, you know, what has been the true effect of the Mac stores on TechServe? I mean, it's kind of, you're like, to me, an old business, a neighborhood business, a community business, and they are kind of a very progressive company, but also kind of like a corporate mentality. So how do you define this recent change in your culture?
I think for the most part, it's a rising tide lifts all boats. Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, the Apple community has just exploded and, you know, gone totally mainstream with the iPhone and the iPad. It's a whole new world.
Which you guys don't do, right?
We do all of that.
Yes. We do all that. Okay.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We do the Verizon iPhone. We don't do the AT&T. We do the iPads.
Hmm.
We do the whole
Apple product line.
But, I mean, you guys must have been super threatened when that first one opened, I believe, on Fifth Avenue, where you guys...
Yeah, the first one opened in Soho, actually a month after we moved from being an upstairs insider location to the ground floor.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been growing ever since.
Mm-hmm.
So it's exciting. We compete in some ways with the Apple stores. We think that we offer radically different and better services and just a different environment.
What's above a genius? Is there, if they've got the geniuses, what are you guys?
Somebody who works at TechServe.
Somebody who works at TechServe. Well, this is so interesting. God, I need to have you guys back because all these questions are popping up as you guys are talking. Because how important is a computer to everybody? I mean, like I say, it's like oxygen. So we'll take a break and we'll come back and talk about Steve Jobs and the whole distribution chain and recycling computers, which you guys are a big part of with your social program. So we'll take a break and be back in 1 minute. All right, we are back with David Lerner and Kevin Hart of TechServe here in studio. Welcome back, everybody. So fascinating, this whole, I mean, people write about the whole corporate culture of Macintosh all the time. Steve Jobs, I mean, there's all this mythology around it. So what's your basic experience with the overall corporate culture that is Macintosh?
They're a very interesting company to work with. I mean, obviously, they're the most innovative provider of consumer technology in the world right now. Corporations, as individuals with a bring-your-own-device to work or just enterprises, are adopting them more rapidly than ever expected. So I think that people are really understanding and embracing the technology that, you know, Apple brings to market. And it's really fascinating to work with them because the pace at which they introduce products to the market on a yearly basis compared to somebody like a Microsoft, where people are still running Windows XP or Windows 98. And, you know, that has a shelf life or a production life of a decade. And with Apple, you're getting new and exciting innovations and products to play with and put into a production environment on a yearly basis.
Hmm. So, so
it's very, very different.
It's kind of a good news, bad news thing. I think it's called cutting off the long tail, in that they don't worry about their legacy products at all. They're moving forward very fast, and it allows them to innovate incredibly.
And make more money, right? Because then you always have to buy the next thing. I mean, is planned obsolescence?
I don't think that's really... I mean, that's a side effect. I don't think that's the goal.
Mm-hmm.
The goal is to really innovate and have amazing products. And if I think Microsoft has gotten lost trying to make everything work with 5 or 10-year-old software, and Apple is just like, screw it. We've got something cool. Yeah, what you bought 3 years ago isn't going to work.
What does an average American spend on computer equipment a year? Or, I mean, do you have any stats that go? I mean, are people...
Well, I think that changes, right? I mean, if you go back to the PC days, and what you were buying then and spending on an average desktop or workstation or even a laptop, you know, the price point for that machine is dramatically different today. Mm-hmm. I think people are buying more products. Mm-hmm. I don't know that the spend has changed that much, but there certainly is a lot of products. So if you look at the Apple ecosystem, and they call it the Halo effect. I mean, how many people have a MacBook Air, an iPad, an iPhone, an iPod? Mm-hmm. You know, I'll raise my hand. You know, yeah. I have them all, and as the new products come out, I'm getting them. And it's not because I work at TechServe. It's because, you know, I have those products. My family, my friends, the people that, you know, are devoted to, you know, the products that Apple provides are going out and buying those. Now, you ask how many people have multiple PCs. Nobody's raising their hand. They have the one they're using today and the one that sits in the closet. And then maybe they have a, you know, they obviously have a smartphone or something, but nobody's going out and buying the Apple product line like the people that use those products.
But that is one of the things that differentiates TechServe from the Apple stores, is that we're happy to help people with older products.
Uh-huh.
We're not, you know, the Apple stores are pretty much like 3 years and you're out.
What's the oldest product that you guys get?
We still see Emacs occasionally.
Oh, brother.
We see people wanting to run OS 9. So.
Well, some people are laughing, and other people are like, what the hell is he talking about?
I saw a Duo last week brought in for service, and that was pretty interesting because they wanted us to recover the information off of it.
Oh, brother. That's so funny.
Without a power cord.
Well, we do very well at data. I mean, data recovery is one of the many services we offer that the Apple stores don't. We have a very good success rate at it.
I learned that. My whole phone got lost because the button got stopped. I wish I would have been able to recover that service. So has Steve Jobs passing away, will that have a long-term effect for a store like TechServe?
I feel that Apple's got a really deep bench. Mm-hmm. I think he did set a direction and a vision, and I think they're gonna go in that direction for a long time.
And can you tell us just the computer landscape of stores like yours in the rest of the country? I mean, does every major city have a TechServe, like someone who independently moves Macintoshes better than anyone else?
There are Apple specialists all over the country. Very few of them are as large as we are, and there are some cities that don't have significant presence.
And therefore, everyone must use a PC in that city, or I mean...
No, people go to the Apple store, people buy mail order, people find... You know, there are little guys...
But still, PC vastly outnumbers the number of Macs,
in terms of market share, in pure devices in the market, they still are a larger percentage, but it's shrinking. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the sales trends of new devices, you know, Apple has eclipsed PC sales, you know, quarters ago and continues to outpace them.
Hmm.
New devices.
Very interesting. Well, tell us the difference. Many people know the store, which is really just worth visiting, even if you don't need to buy something, because you'll find something in there that you could like. I tried to buy one of the old radios. I said no. But what's the difference between the store and the kind of other businesses that fall under the TechServe umbrella?
So as we were talking about earlier, within the store, we have our whole services team. So those are the devices that people bring either in or out of warranty, and that will help them fix. We have a data recovery team that David mentioned. Unfortunately, it's really interesting as people come in for service, and a lot of times, you know, I'll stand down there and greet people as they're coming in just to talk to them and get a feel for the customers. And I'll ask people questions, and one I usually ask is, you know, did you back up as you're coming in for services? And it's always surprising to me that that the number of people who religiously back their data up is probably 10 or 15%. Hmm. And, you know, the price of a hard drive versus having to go through a data recovery and hopefully that it works is, you know, just vastly different. So please back up your data, everybody. Then also associated, you know, aside from the store, we have a whole corporate sales and services team. And that actually comprises more than 50% of our current revenue, hmm. where we're working with major corporations in the SMB marketplace, helping them with their Apple needs and all the solutions and software services that go around that.
Hmm.
And then lastly, we have a rentals team that we can, you know, rent people devices on a short-term or longer-term basis. And that's interesting for people who are interested in trying the devices and or have special need projects. And
like a movie set or something?
A movie set, a lot of graphic artists. Fashion Week is very big for us all the time people are coming in with the demand. iPads certainly have taken hold in that rental markets where people are looking to use them for special events, et cetera. Mm. So it's a special and extra added service that we can give to the consumer or the businessman.
Very, very interesting. And now you're even the aftermath, throwing it out. You're throwing your computer out. You guys are very engaged in a kind of e-waste program.
So we got together with the Lower East Side Ecology Center in 2007. Hmm. It was, I think initially it was around some, New York City was discussing new laws about e-waste. And we actually testified in the city council in favor of those laws. Later, New York State passed a looser law that superseded it. But so we currently do quarterly e-waste events. We used to do them just at our store on 23rd Street. More recently, we've been doing them all over the city in all five boroughs.
And what happens? I mean, people just will come and then... is there a party? I mean, or do you just bring everything? Do you accept everything?
We accept pretty much any e-waste, TVs, mm-hmm. you know, all sorts of computers.
And where do people throw it? In the big dumpster?
Well, we get stacked up on pallets mostly.
Wow. And where it do you goes, ship it
and
to?
It's so we follow kind of Apple's guidelines, which are kind of the best guidelines for e-waste, that everything is basically shredded, destroyed, nothing is shipped out of the country. Hmm. There's been a big problem with e-waste where products are shipped to poorer countries where they do various chemical processes to extract gold and stuff, and it has rather bad side effects. So we are sure nothing leaves the country.
And how can people look more about this e-waste? Where would they find it?
techserve.com/recycling.
Very interesting. So if you were to rate the top two products that Macintosh has ever produced and the worst two, is that possible or is that just a crazy question or at least one? And what's its best device? I mean, is it just...
I mean, today the iPad and the MacBook Air are just, I think, they're my favorites by far.
The MacBook Air is basically an iBook, but that just weighs very light and doesn't even have a CD area, right? It's just so
right.
Light.
It's a MacBook with a solid state drive, basically.
Hmm.
It's just like 3 pounds.
And I think you have to throw the iPhone in there too. I mean, it's just such a revolutionary product, and you look at the adoption rate, and you know how many imitators followed them, or the knockoffs that have come out of it. It's just amazing. But even their last earnings report, as of yesterday, it was so strong based on the iPhone and its global acceptance. There's no other device like that.
And the worst?
Well, probably the PowerBook 5300 was certainly wonderful for the service business. And I had a lot of trouble with the kind of polka dot iMacs.
That was the style thing, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, so you have a team of 200, David, huh? I mean, this is really an unbelievable, the large company, or middle-sized company, but people look at TechServe, they might not know. 200 is a lot of people to employ.
It is, but I mean, they're kind of amazing people. They're all sorts of artists. Some are like pure technicians, and some are musicians, and this is their day job. And we love having the mix.
And do you have 500 resumes in your inbox of people trying to get jobs with you guys?
Oh, we do.
And people stay for many years, right? I mean, I've certainly recognized a few of the faces in there time and time again.
Yeah, certainly the turnover at retail is higher than the technicians or the back office. But I think we have very low turnover.
Well, that's excellent. Guys, thank you so much for coming in. And I hope, you know, you guys are one of our big eight sponsors this year. So we hope this is not the last time in studio. I hope other shows have you on and you continue to listen. But thanks so much for your support. We could say we would not exist without you guys. And there's a lot of good stuff coming out of the station. So thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we will be back after this break. And thanks for listening. All right, we're back. So sponsored by Fairway Market, also by our last guest at TechServe on 23rd Street. And now we have in studio Marco Fornieris. Did I pronounce that correctly?
That's right.
Okay. Marco Fornieris is in my 2 years living in Italy, where I lived at the slow food headquarter town of Bra in the Piedmont. La Libera, which is Marco's restaurant, had always been my favorite restaurant, you know, to go to. You know, you didn't need to make a reservation, although it's advised, and you would go and just get a meal cooked by him. And man, was it one of my favorite places to go to. Marco, welcome.
Thanks very much. For me, it's an honor to be in the radio, Heritage Radio. And thanks, Patrick,
sure.
to make this possible.
Well, hopefully it'll be a good interview. Now, did you know Radio Bra Onde Rosse from Carlo Petrini back in 1975? Did you know him back then?
It's a long time ago, but I still remember a little bit of that radio.
Yeah, because, you know, it's a small part of the world over there, so... So Marco, your restaurant is called La Libera.
That's right.
It's lalibera.it on the website, right?
On the website, that's right.
Now, describe the food there.
Well, what you're trying to do, what we also always trying to do is to transform the materia, the materia prima, what we call materia prima.
Ingredients.
The ingredients, local ingredients. So we always have attention to the product and to the market food, actually.
Now, do you use those products in a particular way in Piemonte, different from the same products in Tuscany or in Sicily, or are the materia prima different?
Well, materia prima is really different in Piemonte, mm-hmm. Because... Actually, I think that is the most important cuisine in all the region of Italy.
Really? You think Piemonte cuisine is the most interesting?
I think so. I mean, for the variety of ingredients that you can find at every single season.
But strange because it's far to the north. So I would imagine there would be fewer... ingredients.
No. We call the food valley, actually, and because there's plenty of things to work with, and even we use olive oil for an old exchange with Liguria side. Liguria had the sea, and we don't have the sea, so we le vie del sale, so the track of
salt road.
The salt road. Yeah, that's right. They used to give to Piemonte olive oil, anchovies, and all the stuff. Cod. Everything was preserved under salt, of course, at the moment.
But, and then, what did you give back?
We give back wheat, because they don't have any wheat and even meat, a lot of meat to the. Liguria side.
So you had very green, lush valleys? Was it very abundant production there? Because I know now Barolo, Barbaresco, the Nebbiolo grapes. So of course, it's very rich agriculture.
Yeah, and I think that also this this very close work with the winery has made Piemont high level cuisine. So you can go there and drink and have real food. Well, what I think is this. I mean,
No, it's very, very good. Now, tell us about the place. Alba is the truffle capital of the world, the truffle capital
of
the world.
That's right.
So do you put truffles in everything all the time?
No, we don't. We don't. We usually use truffle on the real season. That is, we start in October, late October, November, and a little bit of December. So it's, as you can see, the it's very short period. Mm-hmm. Then we start truffle. And it depends always also by the season. If the season is good, we have a lot of truffle. If not, we don't have.
So this has been a bad year for truffles.
That's right. It was a bad year for truffle, yes.
So that means they're going to, the few that exist are going to be valued much more.
That's right. The price is going up.
So what would a kilo, which is 2.2 pounds.
A kilo will cost around 3,000 euro.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, Jack, what's 3,000 euros in dollars? Like
probably $5,500, something like that.
Your research doesn't go into the monetary world. You're like, I'll research everything in a second, except exchange rates.
$3,900.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Yeah. Ooh, I would have thought it was closer to what you said, Jack. Interesting. So, in Alba, you're on a beautiful, picturesque, lovely little medieval street.
That's right. We are in the back of the main street, that is Via Maestra. Don't worry about Alba. It's a very tiny city, so you won't get lost over there, like we do in Brooklyn.
Well, yeah, you thought. We actually found out. I was like, "What neighborhood are you in? I'll come pick you up." And Marco says, "I'm in Brooklyn." I'm like, "There's many neighborhoods in Brooklyn," and we actually Googled it and found out that Brooklyn has as many residents as Rome.
So. It's like I said, I'm in Rome.
Yeah, exactly. You're in Rome. Now, my last two questions, Marco. Again, this restaurant is named La Libera.
That's right.
La Libera, and we'll put the website up. If anyone goes to the Slow Food events, the cheese every 2 years, like my wife Anne goes, or the Salone del Gusto on alternate years, La Libera in Alba is definitely a must-stop place. So tell us a little bit about the past.
Well, we started La Libera in 1994, and was a very simple place. I mean, you can get in and just have a dish. So a place. This is it's the name came from La Libera, means freedom of eating. And then in the years we changed a little bit. The philosophy is still the same. I mean, you can get in and have just a dish, but the philosophy of cooking changed a little bit. So
what, to more classical or more high end?
To more classical and a little bit with the new eyes, you know, with the new purpose and something. New is going on with the old stuff. That is what I think about my cuisine.
Very nice, very nice. And tell us about the future.
Well, the future is we just opened a very very small, about 15 people private room.
Okay.
So the future is that. I mean, we are still keeping doing what we are doing.
That is so lovely. God damn. I mean, geez, sorry. I'm sorry. Could Americans listen to this? This is so inspiring. I find that really fantastic. Americans are always ready to jump to a new pasture, do something, you know, and there's no lifelong people. People move. People change cities. People go back to university. And I don't know. There's something warm about a culture that, you know, respects the past as part of the future.
That's right.
So, well, Marco, lalibera.com or .it. And thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Patrick. And thanks to everybody.
We're going to have one last segment. We're going to have Mike Sullivan on to talk about Cochon 555 Chicago, which is happening right now as we speak. All right. Mike, are you with us?
Oh, I'm here.
Hey.
I am here in the great city of Chicago, and we're about to have an amazing pork fest.
Oh, my God. Well, tell us some of the farm stories behind Cochon 555 Chicago.
Oh, man. I mean, it's so amazing. You know, all year I just go around trying to find these small farms, supporting these amazing farmers that's raising heritage breed pork, and the best stories is, you know, you're literally talking about their family. I mean, the animals, everything. I mean, the way they're so passionate about it, from the feed to how they're pasture raising them or putting in woods. Every little farm has a different story, different philosophy, and it's a joy for me to be able to work with them.
Now, you, of course, have a lens into working through your farms as the role of the butcher at the legendary Blackberry Farm in Tennessee, right?
Yes.
So tell us about some of the relationships you have formed through that amazing job, and tell us about Blackberry Farm.
Blackberry Farm is, we are in Relais Chateau in the middle of the Smoky Mountains. It's an absolutely incredible place to work. We have about over 5,000 acres of land right in the Smoky Mountains. And we have a full-time gardener. We have a jam maker, a cheese maker. I'm the charcutier. And what is amazing is our relationships with farms throughout. We do a lot ourselves, but to us, even more importantly, we network with small farms around us. So it's an extension. To us, they're our family. And I bring that same kind of mentality to Cochon. You know, on the farms that we use throughout Cochon, they're our family. We are nothing. We are their voice. We are. My goal is to bring a relationship from farms to chefs. Let chefs meet new farms. Let connections going, because farmers only have time to farm. I mean, they're busy. They're they're raising pigs.
They need guys like you. They need guys like you to help them.
Yes, and that's what I'll do. I try to extend that handshake, chef. And guess what? Chefs, I mean, they're running restaurants, and there's so many people banging on their door trying to sell them things, and they just don't have time, and they don't realize these small farmers. So what I do is literally I open the door for these small farms and make the introduction, and it's a great relationship. And there's so many success stories throughout, even this year. We're next weekend we're in LA, and I'm so excited about a little farm in LA, and you're gonna love the name of the farm. It's called Cook Pigs Ranch.
Oh my God, you know what they raise.
Oh, and their last name is Cook.
So oh, I see.
It's a play on, the name. But the success story is this. He's actually in the military. His wife is a stay-at-home mom, so they started this little bitty farm up raising red wattle pigs. And, they found out about me, they contacted me, and they really didn't have that many pigs on the ground. And I was just like, oh my gosh, L.A. L.A. is starving for great, heritage pork.
Absolutely.
And I got them contacted with another farm that helped bring in more pigs to their farm. She's raising them on corn masa and macadamia nuts.
Oh, brother. That sounds delicious and oily.
And I've already got her with three restaurants already begging to buy pork from her. So The success story, 6 months ago, she did not have one pig to sell, to now I got three restaurants trying to beg. She has expanded her pig program tenfold. And literally, she's 3 years, beyond what she expected.
You got to write a book one day, Michael. You are you're going to really like a road trip across America and the pig farms, because there are not that many independents left, right?
Oh, I mean, it's what we're about. And Patrick, you know, I love what you do, because what you do is just bring, I mean, I think most of my, your and my conversations together is, Ben, we just talk about farms you work with.
Yeah.
And that's what I love.
That is what you love. So are you going to call us on from L.A.? We need L.A. too. Come on. Now you're our go-to call guy to get our finger on the pulse of these cities. So hopefully you'll give us 5 minutes next week too.
Yes, absolutely.
Now you have to say yes because I asked you on air. You have to say yes now because I asked you on air and we have all these live listeners. Just kidding. You can still say no, but I know how busy you are and I very, very much appreciate you taking the time. You probably have, how many people coming to the Chicago event?
Over 500.
Wow. So that is a lot of work. Well, Mike, I wish you the best. We're going to put up the website on our show link so people can go to LA for sure. And thanks so much for being on, Mike.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Patrick.
Thanks, Marco. Thanks, David and Kevin. Thanks, Jack. Thanks, Fairway.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.